asked to prepare a testimony, one devotional, and one message, right? And I've been, we actually spent most of this weekend talking about this, right? It says, don't just say a message, right? Be the message and say something that God's really put on your heart and what, you know, God has processed in your heart. And so today, Jennifer is going to come and share her testimony with us, right? And you've been a Christian for how long, Jennifer? 2 years, right? 2 years and things. So she's going to share her story, and so let's welcome Jennifer up.
Hi, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Jennifer. And as I was preparing for my testimony, I told Pastor Sam that I didn't have enough Christian material for 10 minutes. So he said to talk about my pagan days. And I told him I needed 25 minutes for that. I'm 25, and I was thinking to myself, that's very, very little time to talk about my testimony. So I picked something, after arranging my materials, I picked something that I thought stood out from my testimony, and it's this verse, Romans 8, verse 28, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. And what that means in English is that I felt that in my life that even though I was, because I've only been a Christian for 2 years, like actually saved, I felt like even though I wasn't praying for it and I wasn't aware of it, God was working in the background of my life, just orchestrating everything and putting events together so that at the end, standing here today, I can look back and go, wow, that's not a coincidence. That really was God's hand throughout my life. And especially in the meeting of three key people in my life. I'll go back to that, but first I just want to give you a quick introduction. And I have some pictures because I figured it would be kind of boring just listening to me. Okay. Can you all see? Okay, so I was born in California, and someone, this doesn't work. Oh, okay, that's me at one. This is really quickly. That's me at one, and that's... Wait, hold on. Someone? Oh, okay, that's me at eight. And most of you know my sister. This is my sister, and that's Grace. When she was much younger, that's my dad that she's on. And so my family is a Christian family, and I was brought up in the church and told to attend youth groups, but my heart wasn't really into it. And here's the first important person in my life. I was forced to go to a missions trip in 1996, but I didn't not like it because it was to the Olympics in Atlanta, Georgia. And that's when I met a man called, a big jolly African-American fellow called Jimmy Stewart, who actually is Marcus's dad. So I've known the Stewarts for 9 years. And actually, this is Marcus when he was really, really young. This is Charisse, Jimmy. So, I didn't know that back then, 9 years ago, how important the Stewarts family would be to our family. Actually, both families, we've sort of befriended each other. And throughout some key points, they've really been quite helpful to me. And I'll come back to that. And so like I said, so often 1996, it was, I went to this mission trip, but that was it. I just went and had fun. And then I went to university, and I hardly went to church at all. But those 4 years plus the year I graduated, I knew about God, but I was almost too afraid to get close. I couldn't be bothered to get close, and I just thought, and I thought about Christian, hereditary Christianity. Like, if my parents are Christians, that's okay. I don't really need to be one. And but what was interesting is every time I was going to an exam or any time something went wrong, I'd go back to church just for, like, those 2 weeks. So my friends always knew it was exam time because I was in church. And they're like, oh, I hope your exams go all right. But So the year I graduated, I actually attended 180 with Derek and Annie, and I went to the Thailand mission trip. And actually, there's Derek, it's me, and that's Annie on the side. And I have to say, like, I feel, as I was going through this, I felt like such a hypocrite, because all my life I had been going to church, and I'd gone to even missions trips, but I never really understood it. I never got it. And what we learned this weekend is that missions is supposed to be an overspill of your own life. Like, to say the message, you must be the message. And I never was the message. I was just all talk, but I wasn't living the life because I never understood God's love to me personally. If I don't actually get it, there's no way that I would ever be able to have that enthusiasm that could really convince others of it. So, hold on. Okay. And then what happened was, so this is the first year out of university. So when I was 22, and it was a pretty rotten year. I was just really miserable. And my parents said, well, why don't you go on DTS, which is a discipleship training school? And I really didn't want to go because, you know, I just thought God doesn't love me and I couldn't be bothered with God yet again. However, it was in Hawaii. So I thought to myself, oh, that's pretty cool. So I decided to go to Hawaii. And at this time, I had stopped going to 180 as well. But then actually, and this is quite amazing, the week that I decided to go on a DTS, this is like 3 weeks before I was going to Hawaii, I thought I should get a little bit spiritual before I go, just a little bit. So I decided to go back to 180. And actually, the very night that I went back to 180, there was a missions group that came out from Hawaii. And they were doing their dramas and their testimonies. And then there was this one girl that was doing her testimony, and I thought, oh, she's so cool. I would really like to meet her at the end. Well, everybody else thought so, too. So at the end of the meeting, she was surrounded by all these people, and I said, hi, my name is Jennifer, and I'm going to Hawaii. She's like, oh, that's really great. Here's my number. Ring me. And she never thought she was going to see me again, and I never thought I was going to see her. But what happened is when I was living in Honolulu, the place that I was going to live in fell through. So I rang her, and I said, hi, I need a low-budget hotel. And literally, we met each other for 2 minutes. And she said, well, why don't you stay with me? So, I mean, it was just amazing. And that girl's actually Jacinta. So, and she's right here. And then, so it was just really key in my life. And Jacinta had no idea that where I was coming from. And she just so generously opened her house to me for almost 2 weeks. Yeah, because my Hawaii was like my DTS was actually on the Big Island in Kona, and so I was stopping off in Honolulu for 2 weeks. And Jacinta was like a hardcore Christian. And then so when I was there, she was telling me about her church and telling me about like just like how great God was all the time. And we didn't even know each other. We actually got into a little bit of a tiff because I was like, you're always talking about God. She was like, you're going on DTS. So I thought, oh yeah. Okay, so Jacinta was really key just to get me started to realize, like, maybe God has something in store for me. So I was in Hawaii for 3 months just studying the Bible, and then I got saved in Hawaii, which was amazing. I was going there, and I was thinking, oh, I'm just going to Skype all my classes. I'm actually not going to go. I'm just going to lay out on the beach. But God really took a hold of me, and by the third week, I gave my life over to God. And the rest of it was just, it was such a hard time, actually, because God was really, like, spiritually changing me and regenerating me. So I wouldn't say it was the best time, but it was definitely, like, I felt a lot of the muck and the gunk was coming off of me. And then I went to a missions trip in Fiji, and I was in Fiji for 3 months. And in Fiji, this is the third important person that I want to tell you about, is this guy, Masi Lovajua. When I was in 1996, when I was in Atlanta, like I said, I didn't really want to be there. So what I did was I was really big into rugby then. And it was 7,000 people from all over the world. And we all lived in this one big campground. Yeah. So when everybody was in meetings, I was actually out on the rugby field playing with the Fijian team. So it was like this one Chinese girl and like these 20 Fijian guys. And then at the end of the time, I actually said to Masi, remember, this was 9 years ago. I said to him, I was praying this morning, and I felt like I'm supposed to come to South Pacific and come to Fiji and tell people about Jesus, like that. But I didn't really mean it, but I just said that to him. But the thing is, he totally, like, took that on. And what he did, because he's the head of YWAM Fiji, So what he did was he prayed continuously throughout these 9 years, because a lot of people had told him, oh, I have a calling to South Pacific. They probably all meant it, but I didn't. So he was praying for all these people throughout these years, saying, God, you know, you planted this seed in their hearts. You must come. You must bring them to Fiji. And in the year 2000, 2001, he later told me when I met him that he specifically remembered my name and even remembered my face and said, bring Jennifer to Fiji, bring Jennifer to Fiji. Now, honestly, after I told him that, I forgot about it for 9 years. It wasn't even a promise. I just forgot about it for 9 years. When I was in Hawaii and I went to Fiji, I didn't even think about this man. So I stepped off the plane and I went into our orientation class and I was just sitting there. And he comes up to me and he literally did this. He just went... I was like, whoa, who is this man? And he goes, where are you from? And I said, I'm from Hong Kong. And he goes, are you Jennifer? And I just had goosebumps. And I'm like, who are you? and he's like, don't you remember me? I'm Masi from 9 years ago. And he had tears in his eyes. And he's like, I've been praying for you for 9 years. And he was like, I've been praying for you to come, and you're finally here. And, it was just amazing just to think that, like, even though it was just such a flippant, it was just so flippant, like, oh, I'm going to come to Fiji, that he really took it on and prayed. And I believe that the reason why I went was because of his prayer. So it's just what I mean by key people throughout my life. And then what happened is, so DTS is for 6 months. The first 3 months is studying the Bible. Next 3 months is missions. And then I actually felt God told me to return to Hawaii to help my teacher write a book on fear of the Lord. And I really didn't want to go back because my father was unemployed and I wanted to get a job so that somebody in our family would be employed. And then I was back in Hong Kong for a week, and this entire week I said, God, I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back. My teacher had extended the invitation before I left for Hong Kong. And I said, I'm not going back. I want a job. I want to earn money. And I said to God, in DTS, I learned that you can speak to people and that even a person like me can hear your voice. I had never heard God's voice up to then. And I said, I will not go back to Hawaii unless I distinctly hear a voice. And then so for days, I heard nothing. And then one day, I was sitting in the PCC, and Pacific Coffee Company, and I was reading my Bible, and I said to God, God, today's the last day. It was because my ticket was in 2 days. I said, if you don't speak to me today, I'm going to cancel my ticket, and I'm not going back to Hawaii. And I said, do you want me to go to Kona? I said, do you want me to go back to Kona? Because I want to stay here and take care of my family. And I opened up my Bible, literally. I opened my Bible, and this was the first verse that popped out to me. It's in Judges 18:5-6, and it says, so my question is, should I go? And I read this verse. And the priest said to them, go in peace. Your way in which you're going has the Lord's approval. And I was shaking all over. It was the first time. And I just started bawling in PCC. I was crying. This is in Happy Valley. It was a Monday morning. So all these businessmen were like just looking at me. I was like crying over my Bible because I felt like, and it's just the surprise and the shock of feeling like you're actually communicating with God. It was just amazing. And the verse before that was, inquire of God, please, that we may know whether our way on which we are going will be prosperous. And the priest said to them, go in peace. Your way in which you're going has Lord's approval. So obviously I went back to Hawaii, shame. And I stayed there for about 6 months. And this is what I was so, this is what I went back to, which wasn't so bad. And while I was there, it was those 6 months was the time that I really grew. I researched a lot on fear of the Lord, and finished. I was a ghostwriter for my teacher. And some of you who don't know what that is a lot of authors have amazing ideas, brilliant ideas, and they can write it. They can put it in like a core, like maybe 50 pages, but they actually need somebody to write it because they're not strong in their writing. So he gave me 50 pages, and I made it to about 150, just doing a lot of illustrations and examples and things like that. So we finished a book, and my teacher is also a speaker. So he would always let me open. And so, for example, he let me do a 20-minute devotional, or he would let me do like a sermonette, and then he'd come in. So that was like an opening act, and then he would come in. And there was one time where I did a devotional, and during the preparation, I just felt moved to write a poem. And I read my poem at the devotional. And for me now, it's sort of been the poem that I often refer to when I lose myself or I get distracted. And I wasn't going to share this with you, but over this weekend, I heard this phrase said four times. The phrase is, God is God and I am not, or God is God and you are not. So I wasn't going to share this, but when I kept on hearing it this weekend, I was like, well, maybe I should put it into this testimony. So I'm just going to read the poem for you. Okay, and it goes, the title is God is God, and it's, I forgot that I am not God, God is God. I have sought and have fought to be God, God is God. I've been taught that I ought to be God, God is God. I've been caught in the lie that I got to be God, God is God. My soul he's bought not for naught, oh my God, you are God. So that was just a poem that I often think that I am not God, I am not in control, because God is in control. And finally we come to this year, and I've really been blessed with just being here at Solomon's Porch. I believe again, and this is my last bit, I believe again that God supernaturally brought me to this church, because what happened is when I returned from Hawaii, I went out to Discovery Bay to visit Jacinta. She had moved to Hong Kong. And Jacinta, Jimmy Stewart also lives in Discovery Bay. They had just moved there 2 years ago. And so when I met Jacinta, we also met Jimmy. We bumped into Jimmy, and Jimmy was sitting with Lisa. And Jimmy goes, Jennifer, Jacinta, this is Lisa. And we're like, oh, hey, hi. You know, we didn't think anything of it. And then 2 weeks later, it was Jimmy's 50th birthday party. So Jacinta was catering for it, and I went to the birthday party. And Pastor Sam and Lisa were there again. And then Pastor Sam said, said to Jacinta and I, you should visit our church. And we're like, yeah, we'll come. And then when we meant it, and 2 weeks later when we came, the first thing Pastor Sam said was, oh my God, you two actually came. We're like, what do you mean? He's like, well, I didn't think you'd take me up on it. But we came and we stayed, and it's been about almost a year and a half now. And it's just been really, it's the first church that I've consciously made the decision to join, and I really felt that it's really helping me a lot. So that's my testimony. I hope it wasn't too long.
It's interesting how all these roads merge together. Actually, I was in that 96. I was actually in Atlanta. And I think, Jennifer, I don't know if you remember, but I actually spoke to their group. Must not have been very good. I actually forgot. But I was there with Jimmy. I was among the seven. We actually took 50 kids out there. We had an incredible time. And I do remember those guys. Do you remember all those knuckleheads playing Ultimate Frisbee?
Yeah.
That was our group. There was only one huge field, so people were like in and out on that field. But I just want to share with you guys today sort of my heart and what's been going on, maybe with me, but also with church. And so it's not going to be the four-point message that you may, well, you're not used to that anyway with me, but it's not going to be very, I'm just going to sort of stream through in and out and things. But, you know, a few days ago, some of you guys were at Tuesday early morning prayer, and we were praying for the service. And I told people, I says, you know what, I don't have a message this Sunday, which is kind of rare because I usually plan a whole schedule in advance. And I just finished the whole series, you know, the whole coffee shop thing. And so I was like, I don't really know what to speak on. You know, so I said, can you guys pray for me? And so they did. And you know what happened? That night, I had a dream. You know, and I'm not a big dreamer. When I first got into ministry, I used to dream a lot. And there would be times when I was a youth pastor that I would go to sleep Saturday night, and I'd be like, Lord, I don't know what to say the next morning. And I was also I was an accountant at the time, so I was working. I was very busy. And I prayed a lot, but I didn't really spend that much time that week, you know, into the Word to get a message. And so I prayed. And in my dream, this is honest, it happened like three or four times. In my dream, I dreamt that I was actually preaching. you know, and I would sit there and I would just, you know, I'm in, you know, wearing my clothes and I'm preaching. And so I just remember the words that I said. And when I woke up the next morning, I went to church and I said the same words that I was saying in my dream. And so obviously then God moved and we had a great service. And so I'm used to that kind of stuff. But in this dream, I was dreaming and while I was dreaming, I was actually in a foreign country. I don't know where I was, but I was like speaking in a huge crowd. You know, this is like, I used to do this kind of stuff a long time ago, but since I'm in Hong Kong, I don't do these kind of things anymore. And I was in this crowd, and there was a couple of people that I really respected, and they were there too. They were like keynote speakers at this conference, and I was one of the speakers. It was sort of my turn to speak, you know, and so I came up, and they sort of took me to this private loft area. And so I was up there, and if you guys know, like, Peter Wagner and other people, right? These are people, my seminary professor that I really respect. And they came and started laying hands on me and just getting me ready to speak. And this probably happened while I was sleeping. But, man, when they began to lay hands on me and they were praying for me, I was just like, I just hit the electric socket, man. You know, I was like, you know, I just went like, it was just amazing. And the Holy Spirit was just totally filled me up. I don't know if I was hitting my wife while I was sleeping or what was happening. But I felt something so different. You know, and what was happening is in that dream, and I was just getting, I mean, God was just filling me and filling me. And in the process of that, you know, as it was happening, I began to feel like in my heart, like kind of a separation, you know, and I felt like, man, I was so far from God, you know, and that even though he was there, right? I mean, like even, you know, like sometimes you're with people and they're there, but they're not really there, or you're not really there. You know what I mean? And so maybe you know, some of you guys are married, you're with your spouse, and you're there, but then you're not really there together. And it's kind of this funny, and I just feel like, man, God was so far from me, and I was so far from him. You know, and then at a time, I probably spent, when I was a youth pastor, I probably spent a good 2 years of my life, and I would pray this prayer every single day. And it was actually the text I'm going to preach on today. It was out of Exodus 33. You know, and Moses says to God, Lord, show me your glory. Right, and so I mean, I'm just like at least 2 years straight. Every day, I got up and I said, "God, show me your glory," you know. And I was just consumed with His presence, and I just realized that in the midst of this, in my dream, that man, that God's presence had been really away from me for a long time. And so while I'm sleeping and I'm dreaming this, I just begin to weep, you know, and I just begin to cry. And you know, and it's, you know, like, do you guys cry when you sleep? When I dream, most of the time I end up crying for some reason. Maybe I'm too macho. I don't cry, like, right when I'm awake. So God just makes me do it when I'm sleeping or something. I don't know how it works out. And so I'm just crying, you know, and these things. And I woke up and I just got a sense of something divine happened. You know what I mean? Like, you just touch something divine, even when you're sleeping. And so what happens is that I have to go speak at the elementary camp. Thursday is a holiday, and so the Korean church that we're a part of asked me to come and speak to all the elementary kids, right? You know, I do not get nervous speaking in front of people, right? I mean, I've been in front of thousands of people. It doesn't bother me at all. But I get nervous speaking to kids, right? Because I feel like they could just kill me, you know? Like, they'd be like, just get off the stage, you know? You know how kids can be really mean and stuff? And I was really scared. I'm just being honest, right? I was really scared. And I think I masked my fear by saying, yeah, a bunch of punk kids, man. You know, I don't want, you know what I mean? Inside, I was really afraid. I was like, man, you know, because, you know, kids are really honest. That's why girls never walk up to a kid and say, am I pretty? Right? Because they just might tell you the truth, right? You never know, right? So just a little, any case. So I'm up there and I'm speaking, right? And I get to the place, and my wife and I, we both have sort of bad attitudes, you know, about, because it's like all the way in Sha Tin. It's not even Sha Tin, it's in Ma Shan. I mean, it's so far, you know, and it's like a sauna outside, right? And it's like, it's my holiday. I'm supposed to rest and relax, and I got to go to this thing. So I end up going. But then as I start praying for this, I sense like a little bit of excitement in my heart, because God had just kind of revealed to me what He wants to do, you know, in my life, which is restore the presence, but also in, obviously, if it's connected to me, it's connected to people that I'm with as well. And so I started getting a little excited. So we go up and we go to this retreat, and it's a heck of a far away. So we finally get there, and it's evening, and all these kids, and they're running around like crazy, man. They're smelly, you know, they're sweating. It's so hot. Their hair's all wet and smelly. You know how kids get, right? And stuff. And so then they have like worship time, you know? And so, you know, it's always a good gauge for me. Like, when I go in to speak at a place, I sort of always see exactly what's going on at the worship. You know, are they really worshiping, or are they just like, you know, doing one of these things, or are they like, you know what I mean? Like they're reading their book or something instead of really, like, in other words, are they able to connect with God on that level? And so of course these kids are like, you know, doing their thing and stuff, and I was like, oh great. But I felt, sense, man, God is going to release something. And so I ended up giving a message, right? And it was just a real simple message, and actually they were pretty captivated. And I spoke for about a good 25 minutes, right? Which is, you know, life's, you know, attention span of a 5-year-old, right, is like 3 minutes, right? You know, a 30-year-old is like 5 minutes, you know? That's why it's amazing you guys can listen to me for so long. And so, you know, I started speaking, and God does something. It was the most amazing thing. Now, there were about 65, 70 kids in the room, and teachers as well. And after I started speaking, I just said, we're just going to pray for you. You know, and kids, I just asked, if you really want to feel God's presence, if you really want to be in God's presence, you really want to know Him, just stand up. You know, and all the kids stood up and said, no, you don't understand what I'm saying. If you're really, really serious, right? If you're kidding around, just get your butt down, right? I mean, I'm very, you know, strict that way. Just sit down, because if you're not serious, don't, you know, just sit down. And the kids all still, they're all standing up, right? And things, and so we just started praying for them. And just, I mean, it was the most precious sight, like little, you know, little, like, you know, 10-year-old girls just bawling before the Lord, you know, and you know, little boys, and the kids, the little kid boys are funny, because, you know, they're like, trying to become men, right, the little thing, and so they don't want to outright cry, so they go like this and cry, like they're standing like this, you know, and they're, you know, they're weeping. The cutest thing, actually, is I was telling these kids, I was saying, you know, you need to get into a posture of receiving from the Lord. And so just close your eyes and just put your hand out. But I was holding the mic with one hand, right? And so I said, just put your hand out. And I just expect them to do this and just hold your hand out like you're receiving from the Lord. And so then I finished, I put the mic down, all the kids were like this, right? I mean, you know what? They really do listen to everything you say. It's pretty amazing. And so every kid is just like this with one hand. But like I said, the amazing thing was God showed up in that house. You know, and kids were, you know, even like, you know, kids that were like trying to talk all through the service, you know, like they just start crying. They don't know what's happening to them, you know, and God just starts touching their hearts, starts touching their life, you know, and I'd say more than half these kids are touched. Even so, the teachers were getting touched, you know, and God's just really moving on them. And so much so that they had another activity afterwards. But the pastor in charge was so moved. He says, you know, if you guys want to stay to pray, come up to the front. You know, and if you need to go, you can go, you know, and get your refreshments. And, you know, they have refreshments downstairs. And, I mean, the kids, come on. Cookies, you know, candy, refreshments, or prayer. You know, am I going to meet with God, or do I want that candy bar, right? And stuff. And, like, it must have been probably, like, 20, 25 kids end up staying. And they just all went to the front, and they all knelt, right? And the pastor just led them in prayers. And they were just kneeling, and they were just really crying out to God. And that was actually one really special part during their prayer time. We left a little bit afterwards. In the prayer time, the pastor said, you know, how many of you guys' parents are not saved? You know, and so some of, you know, it's probably got a good 10, 15 kids raised their hand out of the group and stuff. And wouldn't it be just right? It's the kids whose parents are not saved are the praying kids, right? Because they're the ones that carry the mantle in their family, even though they're so young. And so these kids all raised their hands and things, and, you know, and then while I was watching, and then they really started praying, and I mean, they were really praying, you know. And for me, when I was watching that, I was just thinking, God, how can you deny these little kids? You know what I mean? I was just, you know, these precious little kids that God was just touching, and they're praying for their mom and their dad and their brother and these things. I just kept thinking, God, you know, you as a loving Father, how can you deny the prayers of your precious children? You know, there was a bit of like, you know, obviously I was getting a little emotional while I was there, but also there was a bit of like, man, done deal. Man, these parents are going to get saved. And they're going to have these little kids bugging God for the rest of their life, right? I was going, these kids, these parents are going to do all right. You know, and I left that meeting, and, you know, and then we came back and just reflecting, and, you know, then we were at this retreat this whole weekend, and we just had an amazing time. I mean, just every time we would worship, God would just show up. You know, and where worship is supposed to be 30 minutes, and we're supposed to get into, like, our schedule is all messed up, you know, and, you know, even this morning, right, we came a little late, we're supposed to be done at a certain time, but as we're worshiping, the Lord just began to move on us, and just the presence of God just came down, you know, and just began to stir in our life. Let me share a story. I shared this story with many times before. It's my favorite story about this topic, but years ago, I went to Nepal, And when I was in Nepal, we went to this very kind of famous temple, right? And they call it the Monkey Temple. And this monkey temple, because there's monkeys there, and a lot of monkeys, so it's kind of scary. There's also a Buddhist temple there, and there's a Hindu temple there. And it's a really dark place. In fact, if you in Kathmandu, if you ever see the pictures, it's actually a big tower, and the eyes of Vishnu are there. And it's in one of the highest places in Kathmandu, because the whole idea is God is watching you, right? You better be careful, man, right? Vishnu is watching you. Be careful. And so I was there, and we just had an incredible time, but it's not my trip. The next year, my friend, because I introduced him to the missionaries and stuff, my friend went with a team from our university. And while he was there, he happened as he was walking along. We were doing prayer walking during this whole time, and he's walking along. He sees these Buddhist monks, you know, and they're probably about four of them, you know, three or four, and they're all like 10 years old, and some look like they're 15 or so. They're really young, right? They're shaved heads, you know, they got the orange, you know, thing on with their prayer beads, you know, I mean, the whole thing. These guys are the real deal, right? And so what happens is he comes up and he notices that the older monk is actually picking on the younger monk, you know, and so my friend Tom walks over there and says, "Hey, what are you doing?" You know, and of course the translator is translating all this. He says, "Hey, you're not supposed to be doing that kind of stuff." You know, and these kids are kind of like, you know, why is this white guy yelling at me, right? I mean, they don't know what's going on. And so, but they're having this conversation. He says, "What are you doing?" And he starts telling them through the translators, "Don't you know? If you're mean to your little brother here, don't you know in your religion, in your next life, you're going to come back like a dog or a cat, you know, or some kind of fly or something? You know, because you believe in reincarnation." You know, and the kids are like, "Oh, that's true," right? You know, and then also he begins to tell them, "But, you know, I believe in my God and in Jesus Christ." And he just basically just gives the whole gospel presentation. Can you imagine? He's one of the darkest places in Nepal, right, which is considered one of the darkest places in the world. You know, and so he's sitting, right, in this temple. And I can tell you some stories of how dark it is, but I'll just spare you for now. You know, and he's sitting there and he's having this evangelistic presentation to these monks. I mean, these kids gave their life to go into their ministry. And he's having this conversation with them. And so he's finished his whole presentation, and I think he realized he didn't really get anywhere with these kids. And so he's thinking, "Okay, God, what should I do?" And the Lord just gives him one simple question. You just ask him this. You know, and so he asks the little kids, "Well, you've been doing this for a long time, and it's your God, but let me ask you something. Have you ever felt the presence of God?" And just real simple. Have you ever felt the presence of God? You know, and you've been, you know, at this monastery, you've probably been here since you were a little baby. But have you ever felt God's presence? You know, and the little kid was just sort of taken back and says, "No." So my friend just, nice, he's being filled with faith. And so he tells the kid, "Take my hand." And so the little kid takes his hand and says, "Close your eyes," right? And then everyone in the room, close their eyes. And he just said this simple prayer, "Jesus, reveal yourself to this boy." And as he prays that, Tom and the other students, they could feel something came into the room. Boom! The presence. You know, the Old Testament talks about, you know, the presence of God, the glory of God, kabod, right? Or kavod, or however you want to say it. Hebrew is probably, you know, it's probably something like that. Right? They're probably just spitting something, but, you know, at the kabod, which is they know it as the heaviness of God. And all of a sudden, the kabod, the glory of God, came into the room. And everyone just said, you can just feel it. It's just thick. You know, and then they open their eyes. They pray for about 5 minutes or so. They open their eyes. You know, that little kid, just tears are flowing down his face. For the first time in his life, even though he gave his life to Buddhism, even though he gave his life to the monastery, for the first time in his life, he felt God's presence. You know, my message today, it's not much of a message. In a lot of ways, is even Tom's question to us. And it's my question to you. Have you ever felt the presence of God? You know, I say this. Don't be offended, but don't take it the wrong way, okay? Going to church is not enough. You know what I mean? You know, like Sunday, in and out. Now, I'm not saying on God's perspective it's not enough. I'm saying it's not enough for you. God has put something inside of each one of us. A deep, deep hunger for Him. Pascal, the mathematician, right, our philosopher, he used to say that inside every human being is a heart-shaped vacuum that only God can fill. It's in each one of us. You know, and it's a longing to know God, right? You know, Romans, right? In the first book of Romans, you know, Paul begins to talk about this. He says, for since the creation of the world, his eternal attributes, his divine power have been clearly seen, right? And so he says, we are without excuse. And he's saying through creation, as we look at, there's something inside of us that when we look at creation, something inside of us says there's God. But we have strayed so far from that. That's why Paul, you read the passage in Romans, that's why he says we are without excuse. Right? And we change the form of the incorruptible God to a form of man, animals, right, and four-footed creatures. And he goes on and on. Right? Professing to be wise, they became fools, he tells us. You know, and so there's something inside. When we look at creation, it says, God, you're here. You exist. When we look at man, we're supposed to say, God, there's purpose in my life. I didn't come out of some monkey. Are you kidding me? You know what I mean? And so there's no purpose in that whatsoever. And there's something divine inside of us. God placed it inside of us. And there's a hunger. You know, and I see, you know, I've been a pastor for so long, you know. And you know, I've been to many churches, spoken in many different places, all different ethnic groups. And I see this time and time again. And I feel like we're coming on the verge of something that's hitting our church that hopefully is going to just move through Hong Kong. I'm not talking about revival or anything like that, but I'm talking about an incredible hunger for God and His Spirit in our lives. Did you know the world is hungry for that? Look at the movies that are on these days. It's always something about the supernatural, right? It's always something, you know, about wanting to touch something that's out of this world. That's God. Unfortunately, the manifestation of where they're going to that is going somewhere else, but that's God. God put that inside of us. You know, and if I could say that inside each one, and maybe you've been feeling this for a little while, you know, maybe this is something that has been stirring inside of you, but you know, I simply call it, you got to understand what I'm saying, but it's this holy unsatisfaction with life, holy unsatisfaction with church, right? It's like church sometimes just sucks, man. It doesn't keep us, it doesn't connect us to God at all. Do you know what I mean? I'm just being really honest, right? It's just like we just come, we sit, we sing a couple songs, we give a little money, I'm out of here, see you later. And we think we've connected with God. Give me a break. You know what I mean? And stuff in the old churches, if you remember, the center of the church was the communion table. If you go to Europe, you know, you go to these places where the older churches, the center is the communion table. And we have made the center the pulpit. And so now you don't have to connect with God. I'll connect for God for you. And so you can just listen to me. Then you can connect. I said, give me a break. It was never meant to be like that. You know, I mean, I should just shorten my messages from now on, right? I'm not going to, but, right? Just let the Lord really move in the midst of us. And so a lot of times we live vicariously through our spiritual leaders instead of having our own connection with the Lord Jesus Christ. You know, and see, and God has put that inside of each one of us. You know, he's ingrained it. I mean, it's deep within. And maybe you've been going after other things. And maybe you've been going after this and going after that. And then you're coming to a conclusion that, man, it just doesn't satisfy. You know, it's like, wow, you know, I'm successful. You know, I got a nice job. I got this. But it doesn't touch my soul. You know what I mean? It doesn't meet me where I want to be met. It doesn't fulfill that something that's deep inside of me. And then you come to this place, maybe some of you, and saying, there's got to be more. There's got to be more to life than this. Or even some that have been in church, there's got to be more to church than this. You know, and yet we're going after these things, you know, trying to get as many sexual partners as we can, trying to fill our bank accounts with so much money, right? Or trying to, you know, have so many friends and be so popular and get prestige. And then you got it. And then you're like, wow, this is it? There's got to be more. There's got to be more. And I'm here to, in this place, to say, there is more. There's a lot more. He is able to do much more exceedingly abundantly than we can ever ask or imagine. Right? The thief only comes to rob, kill, and destroy. But Jesus, I came that you might have life, and life abundantly. You know, and I'm sorry, but you know, as I pray, and as I pray for our church, and as I pray for, you know, expats that are here in Hong Kong, as I pray for, you know, second generation community, you know, these are the people that God has called me to for this season of my life. As I pray, I just see prison boxes, you know, just people in these prisons, just locked up. But yet, you know, the funny thing is when I see that, and as I pray and I have this vision, the door is not locked, the door is open. In other words, they're in their own prison. No one's keeping them in there.
they're almost in there by habit. They're in there by choice, right? They're in there in all different ways. But I just figure, you know, I just reckon there's something inside of you, because I know there's something inside of me. And I've talked to different people. There's something inside of you that you really want God. You may not want all the rules and regulations. I'm not talking about that. You know, you may not want someone to tell you how to live your life, but there's something inside each one of us that longs for God, for something deeper, something more than what we're experiencing right now. And just a simple way of expressing that is the presence of God. Let's turn to Exodus 33. I want you to see how important this was for Moses. You will never understand Exodus 33 if you don't understand Exodus 32 and Exodus 34. It's one of these passages that you must connect them all together. In fact, you will never understand Psalm 23, right? You know, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not. You will not understand Psalm 23 without Psalm 22 and Psalm 24. Right, these things come in triples, right? And so when you see the thematic of everything that's going on, that's exactly what's happening here in Exodus. In Exodus 32, what is the significant thing that happens? We'll dialogue a little bit. What's the significant thing that happens in Exodus 32? Yeah, these guys made the golden calf, man. I mean, just knuckleheads. Right here, Moses is their leader, is up in Mount Sinai. He's communing with God. I mean, the Spirit of God is moving. It's so powerful, right? And all of a sudden, next thing you know, he comes down and he's going to give them the law, right? And in fact, he's going to give them, you know, the structure by which they live their life, you know, the very thing that's going to give them life. And he comes down, and what happens? All these guys take all their jewelry and they make this golden calf. You guys ever seen that movie, Charlton Heston? Right? You guys seen Ten Commandments, right? You know, I mean, it was more crazier than that. You know, and so these guys make a calf. Moses gets incensed. He throws the Ten Commandments, you know, breaks this stuff, and he's so upset. Not only is he upset, God is thick, man. Right? I mean, God's heads want to roll right there with the Lord. I remember Moses intercedes, right? So I'm paraphrasing, but I want you guys to go back and read 32, 33, and 34. Moses intercedes on behalf of the people and says, no, God, you can't kill them. Please don't kill them, or else, how else will the nations know that you're the great God, right, if you don't have any people, you know? He didn't really say that, but that was my own interpretation, you know? And so this whole thing goes on, and then he gets to Exodus 33. And so, because they're about to enter the promised land, right? And he tells them, he says, okay, so this is what I'm going to do for you. And if you turn to, go to Exodus 33. Let's read from verse 2. Now, Exodus 33 is the beginning. He hadn't done exactly what's happened yet. And the Lord, let's go from verse 1, 33. The Lord spoke to Moses, depart, go up from here, and you and your people from whom you have brought up from the land of Egypt to the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, to your descendants I will give it. And I will send an angel before you, and I will drive out the Canaanite, the Amorite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Go up to a land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up in your midst, because you are an obstinate people, lest I destroy you on the way. So this is what he's saying. God is telling these people, look, I'm going to give you this land. Right, you can have all this stuff flowing with milk and honey. Everything I promise you, you can have this all. I'm going to send an angel before you, and he's going to wipe these people out. But I'm not going to go. You have it? In other words, God is saying, you can have my power, right? You can have all these things, my provision, but you're not going to have me. And what does Moses say? Go down to verse 12. Moses said to the Lord, see, you just say, bring this people. But thou thyself hast not let me know whom thou wilt send with me. Moreover, thou hast said, I have known you by name, and you have also found favor in my sight. Now therefore I pray, if I have found favor in your sight, let me know thy ways, that I may know thee, that I may find favor in your sight. Consider too that this nation is thy people. And then he said, my presence shall go with you, and I will give you rest. And then he said to him, if thy presence does not go with us, do not lead us up from here. You see what's happening? Right? God says, I'll give you my power. Right, I'll give you my provision, but I'm not going to go. And now Moses and God are having this dialogue. And so God says, okay, I'll go with you. right? And so, and Moses wanted to make sure, says, look, listen, God, right? Now, let me get this straight, because if you don't go with us, we don't want to go. In other words, forget it. You know how incredible that statement is? How many generations were they in Egypt crying out to God? You know, from the time of Joseph. You know what I mean? And stuff. I mean, this is an incredible time. And then they've been crying out to God for deliverance. You know, and they're in the cusp of getting to that place. You know what I mean? They're almost there. I mean, they can almost see, you know, and taste the milk and honey. You know, and he says, God says, I'm going to give you my power. I'm going to give you my provision. I'm not going to go. And then also there's a turning. And he says, I'm going to go. And Moses just wants to be sure. He says, Lord, if you don't go, I'm not going to go. And we're not going to go. What are we talking about here? I'm talking about a hunger for God's presence. See, some of us will be happy with God's blessings. God, bless my life, bless my, you know, church, bless my family, bless my sister, bless my brother, you know, bless my car, bless my bank account, bless my, you know, you can go on and on, just bless me, and you're happy with God, you know, I'm blessed, well, man, I'm so blessed, you know, I'm so, man, you know, you got God's power, you got God's provision, well, this is great, but you don't got God, you know, and it's like God's way over there, but you got God's blessing, I got a good job, I got clothes on my back. You know, I'm here in Hong Kong, living the life. But you don't have God. God's presence is way over there. But it's okay. It's okay. Because I got all His stuff. See, I got all His stuff. You don't have God, but you got His stuff. His power, right? His stuff, His things. And it takes a heart. See, this is what God is looking for. It takes a heart to say, God, thanks for the stuff. You know, don't be like, no, I don't want none of the stuff. Come on, be honest. We want the stuff, okay? It's like, God, thanks for the stuff. But more than those things, God, I want you. I want you, Lord. I appreciate all these things that you give me. I appreciate, God, I'm just so thankful for these things. But God, when it comes down to it, I want you. And God, I want you so bad. I want you so much. I'm not going to go anywhere. In fact, I'm going to stay right here until you come and you go with me. That's Moses' heart, right? I mean, that's exactly what he's talking about. And things, you know what happens when people are moved in this way? God comes. God just shows up, man. Right? That's what I mean at the elementary camp. These kids, I said, you guys want God to come in the house? You want God to come and move on you? These kids are, yeah, okay, right? And God moved. You gotta understand, all through the Bible, God moves when people want Him. Right? When people want Him. When people want His stuff. You know, Lord, give me all these spiritual gifts. You know, I want this gift, I want that gift, I want that gift. And then you don't want really anything to do with God. You know, I say, I'll take the stuff. And God said, well, yeah, because you're really sad. I just need to give you this thing. I'll give you that. Because I'm such a gracious Father. I'll give you this and give you that. But I'm not going to give you my presence. I'm not going to give you the very thing that you need. You don't need gifts. I mean, we need provision, but that's not what your soul needs. You need the presence of God. And it was Moses that stood in that place, right? And he says, God, if you don't go with us, man, we don't want to go. If your presence doesn't go with us, we don't want to go. And then he takes it a step further, and this is where Moses starts getting really profound. And he says, look at verse 16. How then can it be known that I have found favor in your sight? I and the people, it is not by your going with us so that we, I and the people, may be distinguished from other people who are upon the face of the earth. You know, and sorry, my translation is really old a little bit. I don't know why my NSB does that. But he's telling these people, he's telling God, God, if you don't go with us, how are the people going to know that we're different? Huh? You know, I mean, how in the world is my coworker going to know that I'm a Christian? How in the world is my boss? You know, how in the world is my brother who thinks that Christians are a bunch of losers, you know, are so weak? How are they going to know that there's something different about me? You know, I'm not going to beat everyone over the head with the Bible. That's not effective, Lord. You know, I'm not going to wear Christian t-shirts everywhere around me. You know, you know what I mean? It's just like, God, how are they going to know that I'm different? How? The presence of God. And he asks us, how will they be able to distinguish me, us, from everywhere else. How will they know that we're God's people if not by your presence? Church, it's not your church membership that makes you distinctive. It's not how much knowledge that you have that makes you distinctive. It's not how many mission trips that you've been on to. If you're on the worship team or you've served in this or you have these titles, you know, behind your name, that's not what makes you distinctive from the world. It's not your deeds. You have to hear me on that. It's not your deeds. It's not because you don't drink or you don't smoke or you don't do drugs or, you know, or you stay away from internet porn or all these things. It's not. I mean, all those things are good, right? It's not your distinctiveness. Your distinctiveness is the presence of God. It's that you're so filled up with God that you walk into your workplace and just things just change and there's something happens around you. That's what distinguishes you. It's God's presence. But we're so separated from His presence because we're just happy with the stuff. God, I thank you for these blessings. I thank you for the, you know, and we should be thankful. But, you know, we're just, come on now. We're just satisfied that we're going to church on Sunday. You know, it's almost like you never say this out loud, but in your heart of hearts, like, God, you're lucky I'm here, man. I could have been doing other stuff today. Don't you know how busy I am? Don't you know my schedule, my work, and all these things? Man, you better bless me because I'm here. I took time out to come to church today. Right? You better give me something. You know, that pastor better give me a good word today. You know, I mean, I spent my good, precious time. You know, and we're so satisfied with the stuff. And we totally miss out on Him. See, it's easy for me to give a message like this because I live this. You know, like for me as a pastor, you know, I spend so much time preparing messages and preparing a church and these kind of things that I can get so busy doing my church stuff that God's like in Timbuktu. I don't even know. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, and every once in a while, that's why it's good to have a dream or those kind of things. Is every once in a while, God just kind of like, anybody home, you know? You in there, Sam? Don't you know that I've been away from you for so long? You know, doesn't it dawn on you that, you know, doesn't something inside of you say, God, where are you? You know, and I'm thinking, God, but I'm so busy. I'm doing all these things. I'm preparing messages and, man, I'm praying, you know, and just getting ready for church and trying to build your body and all these things. And, you know, and God's just like, well, but I'm not with you. You know, and then you sort of sit and say, yeah, I felt something was different. You know, and then when you get really honest, you're like, you know, God, what I really wanted was you anyway. In fact, I just did all this stuff just to get you, and I totally missed it. You know, and I want to say today that the Lord is here. You know, let me just show you something else that's kind of really neat, because I said in 34, you know what happens in chapter 34? In 34, it comes down, and we just go to verse 6. Actually, in 17 and on, this is when he says, Lord, show me your glory. This is a prayer I prayed for years. Show me your glory. You know, and you know, God says, I can show you my glory, but if you see my face, I don't have to kill you. Right? I mean, that's kind of like scary stuff, right? And so, no, this is, I'm not being sacrilegious or anything like that, but think about this, right? And so he says, I'm going to pass by you, right? He hides him in the cleft of the rock, which is actually, this is kind of like a type of Christ, right? Who's the rock? Jesus, right? And so he puts him in the rock. In other words, he needed to break the rock and put us in it. That's the crucifixion, right? I mean, there's a lot of beautiful imagery if you really get into the word, right? And so he opens the rock, right? He cuts the rock and he puts Moses in the cleft of the rock. And then he comes and he just puts his hand and he hides, right? Because he says, if you see my face, you'll live or you'll die. And so what happens? God comes and, I mean, and all Moses sees basically God's backside, right? Moses sees God's butt, right? And Moses blessed. Can you imagine what it's like seeing his face, you know? I know, that was really bad. And so he comes and right, just the backside of God. And Moses is like, whoa. I mean, the presence came. And all of a sudden now comes revelation. This is what God had longed to show the people of Israel the whole time. In fact, I would say the golden calf was a setup for chapter 34. And 34, look at verse 6. It says, let's go to verse 5. Verse 5 is the beautiful part. And the Lord descended in the cloud and stood there with him as he called upon the name of the Lord, right? It's this thing, descended like a cloud. This is Kavod, right? We call it, in other words, in the Septuagint, they call it the Shekinah, right? This is the presence of God coming down. And it's the Kavod is there. And he says, and he called upon the name of the Lord. And then the Lord passed by in front of him and proclaimed, the Lord God, compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in loving kindness and truth, who keeps loving kindness for thousands, who forgives iniquity, transgression, and sin, yet he by no means leaves the guilty unpunished, visiting the iniquity of fathers on the children, on the grandchildren, third and fourth generations. Revelation. Did you know this is the first time in all of the Bible, the first time that God actually expresses a little picture of his character? Did you know that? Ever since that, at the burning bush, how did God describe himself? There was actually no description, right? He just called himself. He says, I am that I am. And Moses is like, thanks a lot. Like, I know a lot more now, right? I am that I am. Right? I am the ever-present one. It's like eternal. It's I am that I am. And then he goes off later on, and then there'll be some other ones, like in Exodus chapter 6. Right? He reveals and says, I am El Shaddai. Right? I am the Lord God. You know. And then later on in Exodus 15, he expresses himself, and he says, I am Jehovah Rapha. I am the God that heals. These are all just names, right? These are all, you know, just having to do with him. And then later on in Exodus 17, it says, I am Jehovah Nissi, right? I am, the Lord is the banner, right? I am the battle cry. And so these are all just about him, right? It's just his names. First time in the Bible, Exodus 34, God shares his character. God shares with his people. What he shares? He shares his personality. He shares about his characteristic. And what does he say? I'm gracious. Listen, church, you don't know me yet because I'm so kind. Right? I abound in loving kindness and truth. My heart's desire is to forgive. And see, my personal belief, I'm not a scholar or anything, right? Even though sometimes I think I am. My personal belief is God really wanted to express this truth. Because God wanted to reveal himself to people. I think he wanted to express this truth a long time ago, but he had to wait for a divine moment. He had to wait until people messed up really, really bad. You know what I mean? And stuff, because I mean, if they just did a bad thing and says, I'm so kind, like, of course, you have to be kind. I didn't do such a bad thing. You know what I mean? And so, but these guys did a bad, bad, bad thing. You know, I mean, can you imagine that? I mean, it was worse than you can imagine. I mean, they were having orgies during this time in front of this golden calf. You know, that's what the scholars say. You know, and they did a bad thing. And then God is just, it's almost like, You know, like when you see horses when they're about to race and stuff, they're in the bridle, they're about to get out, and God's like that. And he's just waiting to, whoop, hey, you know who I am? I am compassionate God. I'm slow to anger, abounding in loving kindness and truth. And he needed to come in that exact moment because the people were feeling like crap, man. You know what I mean? They knew they messed up bad. And so God comes and says, well, this is who I really am. I am the I am and Jehovah Rapha, and I'm all these things. In my character, this is who I am. I'm gracious. I'm kind. I abound in loving kindness and the truth. I am full of so much compassion for people. You know, it's such an amazing, because let's flip, go to the New Testament. You'd have to turn there, but in Matthew chapter 11, right? Here's Jesus, and right, Jesus says in John, you see the Father, right? You see me. Right? Father and I, we are one. And so here's an exact representation, right? Colossians says that, and Philippians, we'll talk about that later on, the Kenosis passage. You know, and so he gets to this point, and Jesus now, as the ever-present God, all right, incarnate here on earth, what does he say? He says, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Right? He says, you know, learn from me. Listen to those words. Learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. Take my yoke upon you, for my yoke is easy, my burden is, right? Think about this. This is the only time, Matthew 11, that I recognize that Jesus describes himself in his personality. What words does he choose? I'm gentle and I'm humble in heart. Doesn't it sound a lot like Exodus chapter 34? Right? And God says, I'm gracious, compassionate, slow to anger, abounding in loving kindness and truth. The same thing. Jesus says, come to me. You guys that are beaten up and tired and broken down, because God says, because I'm gentle and I'm humble in heart. In other words, I'm not going to expose you. You know, I'm not going to ridicule you. I'm just going to gather you. I'm just going to love you. And I'm going to pour my presence on you. Right? That's what we're talking about here. Some of you guys may feel like you guys really messed up. You know, maybe you haven't been to church in such a long time, or even when you do come to church, you have such a bad attitude. And you know, and I mean, just in your heart of hearts, gut level honest, you just feel really far from God. But God didn't move. You moved. You know, and you can feel kind of guilty. And so that's for the enemy to do those kind of things. And God, ever-living God, eternal God, the I Am, right? Jehovah, El Shaddai. This is not even a step of faith, man. I'm just saying God is here. His presence is here. And His presence is here to love you if you'll let Him. If you want to be like Moses, just a little bit, not like you have to be like Moses all the time, but if your heart is like Moses' heart, and say, God, I thank you for the stuff. I thank you for your power and all these things. But God, I'm not satisfied with that anymore. I got to have you. And if I don't have you, then God, I'm going to wait here until you come. Until you come, God. I'm going to sit in this seat. I'm going to kneel on this floor. I'm going to resign myself, God, into prayer, whatever it takes, until you show up, God. Because I have to have you. Amen. Let's close our eyes.